Welcome back to the Green Front, and we are speaking with our friend Rob Wheeler in this segment. You remember him. He started the Campaign for a Sustainable America, one of the great ideas that won in the top 10 projects that Change.org had folks vote on. They had, easily, I think they got into second spot. Is that right, Rob?
Well, we were in first under the category of conservation, natural conservation, and in the top 10 out of almost 8,000 ideas and more than 500,000 votes.
So obviously a lot of people feel that we need a national strategy for sustainability. What would you say to folks who say, well, Obama gets it, he's a green president, certainly the most environmentally conscious leader we've had yet, easily, but why do we need a plan? Why do we need a policy?
Well, first we have to realize he's got a lot of other things on his plate right now. But, again, it's interesting how you schedule things, and you're so good at it, following up on the other two speakers that have already been on today. We look at the challenges, and certainly they're right. The products that we have in our homes, most people, they're harming our health and the health of our children. But the same thing happens in our natural environment. I say there are three challenges that we have in terms of creating a sustainable future. One is the depletion of our natural resource base. A second is the pollution of the natural environment. And the third is the level of toxics that are harming our health, humans, and our animals and our pets. And all three of those are major challenges. We know that from a report that was put out by the Global Footprint Network and World Wildlife Foundation last year called the Living Planet Report that humanity is already exceeding the biocapacity of the Earth by 130% is what we use, so we're 30% beyond what the Earth can sustain. And we have a situation where the developing world is trying to catch up with the developed world, and it just can't be done. So we're going to have to learn how to do more with less and to invest in energy efficiency and stop the depletion of the natural resource base. But then we have the situation with the toxics and the pollution of the environment. The OECD has done studies where they've seen that 40% of U.S. lakes and streams are either too dirty to fish, swim, or drink from. We have a situation where in almost every stream and groundwater well in America has chemical contaminants in it. And of those different chemicals that are in the water, 32 million people in 2005 were served by water systems with reported violations of the drinking water standards. We have 20% of coastal areas in the U.S. where the fish have high levels of contamination above standards, primarily coming from PCBs, mercury, DDT, and PAHs. So these are things, that we're already much of a ban, not mercury, but the PCBs and the DDT, and it's still washing down into the ocean. And we have a lot of chemical runoffs that come off of our farmlands, and it comes out of our sewers, and it comes off of our roadways. So we have to change how we do things, even though we've made great progress in our country, in really eliminating the toxic chemicals that we're producing that are causing such harm to our children as well as ourselves.
Well, thank you for the compliment on my scheduling abilities, and there is a lot of synergy always, I find, in this green zone, because we've been talking about how to green your home, and now we're going to talk about how to green our house, that is House of Representatives, because there is some key legislation on climate change coming up in the next many months leading up to Copenhagen, the big meeting in December. I was at a Ceres conference. It's a gathering of investors and environmentalists, and it's the 20th anniversary of Ceres. I'm going to get the acronym and what it stands for in just a moment for you. But there were some very, very good quotes. Majora Carter spoke. She had a funny one. She said that Obama is an acronym for officially behaving as magnificent Americans. Another speaker said that the next 8 months will be the most critical in U.S. history for energy policy. And a lot of statements like that, very dramatic, and they're not exaggerated. We are at a tipping point, a crossroad, all those things. And it gives me goosebumps to say it because it's so true. And when you think about how far we have to go, especially if you're looking at Al Gore's challenge of getting us to 100% renewable electricity by 2018, and we have a few bullets to dodge, just environmentally. I'm not talking about the economy and the wars we're entangled in and a lot of other problems, but we really could miss this. We really could blow it if we're not super careful and super coordinated.
That's right. We have some big challenges ahead of us. The Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change estimates that we have to reduce our global carbon dioxide emissions by 50 to 85% by 2050, and that will still cause a rise of about 4 degrees Fahrenheit. That's every day, you know. So, and we all already see in the melting of the polar ice caps. And I just saw a story the other day that said that by 2030, it's quite likely that we could lose all the ice. In the, I think it was in the northern hemisphere, but I forget which.
Yeah, there's all kinds of predictions like that, and they just get more and more dramatic, and yet they're being spoken by very credible people, scientists, and people who are not prone to exaggeration.
But the wonderful thing is we have a lot of opportunities to do something about this. I have a book by Arjun Makhijani.
Let's get some good news.
And his book is called Carbon Free and Nuclear Free, and he lays out a whole strategy for how we could meet this goal and move beyond it and effectively go to zero carbon releases, which is essentially what we have to do because, you know, if we're going to have an equitable situation, it's the developed country that produces most of the greenhouse gases today. So China now is starting to surpass even the U.S., which has, we produce more carbon dioxide and greenhouse gases than any other country, close to 30% of the world.
Now, I want to get back to the U.S. position on the International Renewable Energy Agency. I want to also mention and thank our most recent sponsor of this program, the Alliance for Climate Protection, and they're going to be joining us with a new ad hopefully by next week. But basically, it asks people to let their legislators know in no uncertain terms, you know, badger them between now and whenever the next legislation is coming up and several key pieces in the next couple of months, that this is absolutely imperative that they pass this. And, you know, the time for debate is over, and it's later than we think, and do the right thing.
Well, Representative Markey in the House of Representatives has some very good legislation that is just coming to the floor right now. And, you know, we should be taking a look at that. But you mentioned the International Renewable Energy Agency. He also has legislation on that. And the Founding Congress conference of that agency was just held in Bonn, Germany in January. And it had 125 governments participating. And essentially what it is an agency that will provide research and development and distribution and marketing for renewable technologies, principally in the developing world, but a cooperative partnership between the developed countries and the developing countries. So one of the big challenges we have in getting a strong agreement is the developing countries, China and India, say, why should we invest money that we don't have in cleaning up our use and investing in renewable energy technologies when it's the developed world that has been historically created the greenhouse gases that are already, we've already gone from 280 parts per million to 380 parts per million, and now we have to reverse and come back down. So most of that was produced by the developed countries. So they say, why should we have to change what we're doing? We need additional electricity in order to provide for the needs of our people. So this is legislation for an international renewable energy agency that Representative Markey has introduced. And basically the legislation says that the U.S. should participate in this international renewable energy agency. And 70 countries have already signed on to participate, with another 50 quite likely to do so in the near future. And the agency is likely to be created within the next 2 years and be fully operational by that point in time. And like I say, it will invest so that technologies, the research is done in developing world, and the technologies are implemented in the developing world, and the resources are made available as well so that they can then install the solar capacity and the wind capacity and more novel technologies.
You said that just as the wind blew my door shut. it's been, you know, green conference season around here. There are always many because it is the, you know, very green Northern California Bay Area, but it's also April, and so I was attending one called Turning the Tides just a few weeks ago at Fort Baker, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge, a beautiful site. They have a new green hotel and restaurant and spa and mostly a conference center where they gather the, you know, current leaders in the sustainability movement, but from various sectors, science and education, religion, activists, to really try to tackle some of these big problems that we face. And one of the topics that was getting quite a buzz was biochar. A guy named David Shearer, who I've known for years, talking about biochar being the future. Remember in The Graduate it was plastics are the future? Would you explain to our listeners what biochar's promise is?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned, one of our challenges is how do we reduce the level of greenhouse gases that are already in the atmosphere. So we have to somehow draw it down and sequester it. Well, biochar is produced from carbon being burnt with very little oxygen. And the Amazonian Indians have done this for tens of hundreds of years. And there's very rich soil there that has come from their fires that they would set and then burn them with very little oxygen. And what happens then is as you create the charcoal, it pulls the oxygen, the carbon, out of the air to bond as it's trying to burn and stores it actually in this charcoal. And then the charcoal breaks down and is distributed through the soil. So you're then bringing carbon down into the soil. And the wonderful thing about it is it's incredibly rich for the plants that are growing then on that soil from your agriculture. And they're able to, quite a number of facilities where they're able to take woody matter and create this charcoal and biochar and then spread it. And when they do that, they're able to off-gas fuel that can be used for cooking or what have you.
Rob, we're out of time. We're going to have to deal with some business matters, but thank you for filling us in on your activities as the head of the Campaign for Sustainable America and all the way down to details that are very promising, scientific innovations like biochar. You heard it here.